ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter number 19, The Appearance of Shukdev Goswami, Text 27. Niguda Jatrum Pitutunga Vakshasham Avrita Nadim Vali Valu Valgu Dharam Cha Digambaram Vaktra Vikirna Kesham Pralamba Bahum Samaruttamaham. First of all, please repeat Niguda. Cover. Chatrum. Kalabhum. Prithu. Prod. Tunga. Swaham. Vakshasham. Chest. Avarta. Bird. Navim. Naval. Vali Valgu. Stripe. Uttaram. Abdomen. Cha. Also. Dik Ambaram. Traced by all directions. Naked. Vaktra, curd, vikirna, scattered, kesham, hair, pralamba, elongated, bahum, hands, su amara uttama, the best among the gods, Krishna, avam, you. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Translation. His collarbone was fleshy. His chest broad and thick, his navel deep and his abdomen beautifully striped. His arms were long and curly hair was strewn over his beautiful face. He was naked and the hue of his body reflected that of Lord Krishna. Purport. His bodily features indicate him to be different from common men. All the signs described in connection with the bodily features of Shukdev Goswami are uncommon symptoms, typical of great personalities according to physiognomical calculations. His bodily hue resembled that of Lord Krishna, who is the supreme among the gods, demigods and all living beings. I'll also read text 28. It doesn't have a photo. Text 28. He was blackish and very beautiful due to his youth. Because of the glamour of his body and his attractive smiles, he was pleasing to women. Though he tried to cover his natural glories, the great sages present there were all expert in the art of physiognomy, and so they honored him by rising from their seats. Om Jnana Tivananda Sya Gyanvindana Shalakaya Chakshurunda Mena Tasmai Shri Guru Vedamaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shri Vasudeva Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama 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 Hare Hare. So here in this section of the Bhagavatam, we are seeing Shukdev Goswami, he's making his entrance. So Parikshit Maharaj has been sitting on the banks of the Ganges, and various sages and very prominent personalities, they came from all over the universe when they heard that Maharaj Parikshit has been cursed to die in 7 days. So they were, at that point of time, Shukdev Goswami entered as they were deciding who to hear from. So here, the description of Shukdev in these two verses, the description of Shukdev Goswami is being described. And actually even in the previous verse, which Keshava Prabhu spoke on yesterday, Shukdev Goswami's description is being described here. So it's mentioned that his collarbone was fleshy, his chest broad and thick, his navel deep and his abdomen beautifully striped. So these are symptoms of an uncommon personality. So the point being made is that Shukdev Goswami is not a common personality because he possesses these uncommon features. So there's the science of physiognomy by which, by studying the physical features of a person, you can tell their character. So back then, from these verses we can understand that the sages, they knew this science, and when they saw Shukdev Goswami, they could understand his greatness. So the material world is full of forms and shapes, and in fact the material world is the reflection of the spiritual world. So the spiritual world is full of variegatedness, there's forms. But in the spiritual world, all forms, everything is animate. In other words, everything is conscious. So in the spiritual world, everything is done for Krishna's pleasure. So everyone acts for Krishna's pleasure. So all the variegatedness is meant for Krishna's pleasure. But the material world is the opposite. The material world is a perverted reflection. So in the material world, matter is inanimate. And in fact, the conditioned living entities take on material bodies for sense gratification. So in the material world, the quality of form or shape comes from fire. So it's described in the Bhagavatam, in the creation of the material world, how from these different elements, different qualities come. So from ether, the quality of sound comes. And from air, the quality of touch comes. So then air contains sound and touch. And then from fire, the quality of shape comes. And then from water, the quality of taste comes. And then from earth, the quality of smell or odors come. So we can understand how in the material world where this quality comes from. And ultimately it comes from Krishna. So Krishna has a form. So God has a form. So Krishna is the cause of all causes. So therefore Krishna also has a form. And Krishna's form is the most beautiful in the entire creation. In fact, it's said, we know Krishna has six opulences, and one of those six opulences is beauty. So Krishna's beauty is unlimited, and it cannot be rivaled by anyone else. And of Krishna's qualities, Krishna possesses 64 qualities, and the four qualities which make Krishna distinct from even other forms of the Lord is his beauty. So Krishna's beauty is unrivaled in the entire creation. Though there are so many expansions are coming from Krishna, so many incarnations are coming, but Krishna is very unique because one of his unique qualities is his beauty. So there in the Nectar Devotion, it is said that Rupa Goswami has tried to describe Krishna's beauty. Of course, it's very difficult to describe, but just to make a mundane person understand, he has compared it to material things. So we can just get an idea of Krishna's beauty. So there he says that Krishna's face is as beautiful as the moon. So the moon is very beautiful, it's very soothing. So Krishna's face is as beautiful as the moon. His thighs are powerful like the trunks of elephants. So we can just try to have an idea of Krishna's beauty. So like an elephant's thighs are very powerful. Like the trunks of an elephant, you know, they are, it's huge. so thick. So that's how Krishna's thighs are. They're like trunks of an elephant. And his Krishna's arms are like two pillars. So we can understand how, what a strong personality Krishna is, so beautiful. And then his palms are expanded like lotus flowers. And Krishna's chest is just like a doorway. So like we have this doorway here. So we can understand how broad Krishna's chest would be. It's like a doorway. And at least back then in palaces, doorways would be very, very thick. So Krishna's chest is also very thick. And his hips are compared to dens. And the middle part of his body is just like a terrace. So we can try to have some idea of Krishna's body and his beauty. And then Rupa Goswami also describes that there are the auspicious characteristics of Krishna. So if anyone like possesses these 32 auspicious characteristics, if someone possesses these 32 characteristics, these characteristics are considered to be very auspicious if one has them in one's body. But Krishna, he possesses all of these. And sometimes even great personalities, they possess many of these, or maybe even all of these characteristics. So we'll just look at them. So if like someone has, like Krishna possesses reddish luster in seven places. Do you know those seven places?
Feet.
Yes. Yeah. Anything else?
Ears.
No.
Lips.
Lips, yes.
Palms,
yes.
Nails.
Yeah. So his eyes, the ends of his hands, the ends of his legs, his palate, his lips, his tongue, and his nails. So if Krishna, someone possesses reddish luster in these seven places, it's considered to be very auspicious. And then three parts of Krishna's body is very broad. Do you know those three parts?
Chest.
Forehead, yes.
Chest.
No. And his waist. So Krishna's waist, forehead, and chest is very broad. So that's ten characteristics so far. Then three parts of his body are very deep.
Body
are very deep.
Voice.
Yeah.
Navel.
And intelligence. So if someone possesses very deep intelligence or a deep navel, deep voice, these auspicious signs. And then there's highness in five parts of the body. So five parts of his body are very high.
Nose.
Ears. Yeah. Arms, Krishna's arms, forehead, and thighs. It's very high. And then five parts possess fineness. So the skin, the hairs on his head, and other parts of his body, and his teeth and the fingertips. So they are very fine. And also there are other auspicious signs on Krishna's body, like the fate lines on Krishna's palm, considered very. And also, you know, on Krishna's, what symbols are there on Krishna's feet?
Lotus flower.
Yeah, lotus flower.
Concha. Half moon.
Yeah, half moon. Okay, I'll read it out. So, there are auspicious signs on Krishna's palms and also on his soles. So like on his palms, there's the signs of lotus flower and wheels. So on Krishna's palms, you find these signs. And then on his feet, on his sole, there's the sign of the flag, as you mentioned, thunderbolt, a fish, and there's like a rod for controlling elephants, and a lotus flower. So all these signs and these characteristics, they prove that a very auspicious personality. And even great personalities, they will possess some of these characteristics. So we see here Shukdev Goswami, he is possessing some of these characteristics. So we can understand from this verse, broad chest, a thick chest, deep navel, his abdomen beautifully striped, and his arms are also very long. So we can understand that he's not a common personality. Of course, a common personality will, you know, might possess some of these features, like even someone who's materially beautiful or handsome, they will have a broad chest, a thick chest. You know, they might also have a fleshy collarbone. But these are common things. But if someone has long arms, that's very rare. So we see like Jad Bharat, Shukdev Goswami, they have long arms. And even when Prahlad Maharaj, he was touring the universe, when he came across the python man, and he saw the python man lying down, and but just by looking at him, he could figure out that he's a great personality by studying his physical characteristics. So that's the science of physiognomy. So the reason we get our forms, our material forms, is basically because of envy of Krishna. That's why we have our forms. So everything in the material world is a perverted reflection of the spiritual world. So in the spiritual world, there are so many forms. So in the material world, also those forms are there, but they are perverted. Like when you see the reflection of a tree in the river, it's upside down. So in the material world, everything is perverted. It's upside down. So because of this envy of Krishna, we have basically two diseases. One is envy of Krishna and the desire to lord it over. So because of these two contaminations, we end up in the material world. So as Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, avajananti mamura manushintanu majitam, that fools, they deride me when I descend in a human form. They do not understand my transcendental nature as the Supreme Lord of all that be. So in the material world, we get these forms because of envy, and we cannot even appreciate Krishna's form because of this material contamination. And also Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, avyaktam vyaktim apanam manyanti mama buddhaya param bhavam ajananto mama avyam anuttamam. So Krishna says, unintelligent men who do not know me perfectly think that I, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, was impersonal before and have now assumed this personality. Due to this small knowledge, they do not know my higher nature, which is imperishable and supreme. So it's very difficult to appreciate Krishna's form if we have this material contamination. So material contamination means being covered by the three modes of nature. So when one is covered by the three modes of nature, one naturally thinks that Krishna's form, Krishna is impersonal. And we have to think of Krishna as impersonal if we want to enjoy in this material world. And that's the reason we have come here. So the reason the jiva is in the material world is to enjoy separately from Krishna. So if Krishna's form is right there, is right in front of him, in his eyes, if you can understand God as a form, and he has characteristics and personality, likes and dislikes, then it's very hard to avoid him. So therefore, the three modes of nature make us make our understanding that Krishna's form is impersonal. So when Krishna's form is impersonal, then we can push on with our agenda for material enjoyment. But Krishna consciousness is all about re-establishing that the fact that we are servants of Krishna and Krishna has a form, and that the goal of life is to understand Krishna's name, form, qualities and pastimes. And that is the perfection of life. But our main disease is identifying with the material body. As this famous verse in Srimad Bhagavatam, yese atma buddhi guna pe tridhatuke. So when we identify this body as a self, which is composed of mucus, bile and air, then one is compared to a cow or an ass. So janeshva bhigeshu sa eva gokhara. So if one thinks that this body is the self, then that's not very intelligent. But that's the material disease, to identify with the self, to identify with the body as the self. And the other disease is that the propensity to lord it over matter. So in fact, even Rupa Goswami explains that bhukti and mukti are, if we are hankering for bhukti and mukti, then it's very hard to experience that taste in Krishna consciousness. So these are the two material diseases which we have to overcome. So bhukti basically means to desire to lord it over matter. So the karmis are always wanting to exploit matter for their own sense gratification. So we can see so many types of things are created. Basically, and nature is exploited so we can enjoy collectively and individually. So nations are doing that. They are exploiting the resources so that their the people in their kingdom can enjoy, and they can enjoy themselves. But this desire to enjoy, to control, to possess is an obstacle in our Krishna consciousness. So when one gets frustrated by material enjoyment, then naturally one thinks, okay, material enjoyment is the source of suffering, therefore I want to shun that and I want to become one with the Lord. So Rupa Goswami is saying that this bhukti and mukti, they're compared to being influenced by a witch, to being influenced by a ghost or a witch. So we can, if someone is under the spell of a witch or a ghost, then one loses control of oneself. So that's why it's called being under the spell, in which that means one has no control. So in the material world, everyone is under these two spells. So people are under the spell of exploiting the resources of nature for their own sense gratification. So in Krishna consciousness, we have to consciously give up the desire to lord it over. And till we do that, it's very hard to experience the real taste of Krishna consciousness. And in fact, pure devotees, they do not care for this bhukti or mukti. As Lord Chaitanya, who is acting as a devotee, in his prayers in the Shikshashtakam, he says that, na dhanam, na janam, na sundari. I do not want any amount of wealth, followers, or fame. I only want your causeless devotional service, birth after birth. So we can say that's the mood of pure devotees. So pure devotees are not hankering for name, fame, wealth, position, all these things. And Uddhava, in the third canto, fourth chapter, 15th text of the Srimad Bhagavatam, he says this to the Lord. He says, "My dear Lord, for persons who are engaged in your transcendental loving service, there is nothing worth obtaining from religiousness, economic development, sense gratification or liberation. Although happiness from these different sources can be very easily had by them, in spite of such facilities, my dear Lord, I do not aspire to achieve any such results. My only prayer is that I may have unflinching faith and devotion unto your lotus feet." So from such prayers we can understand the mood of pure devotees. And even Bilva Mangala Thakur, he says that, "I do not aspire for liberation, but liberation is standing at my doorstep with folded palms." So pure devotees do not aspire for these things, but these things are very easily available to them. Krishna actually even gives it to them, though they're not even desiring for it. But our disease, our problem in spiritual life is that we are hankering for these things because we are carrying this conditioning from our material life. So, for countless lifetimes, we have been hankering for these things. That's why we have come to the material world. So when we come to Krishna consciousness, naturally we are carrying that baggage with us. But as we make advancement in Krishna consciousness, as we understand the teachings of Krishna consciousness, so we have to consciously give up the desire for name, fame, position, control, all these things. But the thing is, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement is a preaching movement. So, preaching movement means we have to embrace some of these things in order to spread Krishna consciousness. So, as we perform our spiritual life, our bhakti life, and if we are doing it nicely in due course of time, most probably we will get many of these things. So, we will be, you know, probably given a position, name, fame, you know, control. But the idea is, Krishna gives us these things so that we can enhance His service. So we can use these things to glorify Him. That's the whole idea. But if we get enamored by these facilities, which come due to our practice of Krishna consciousness, then that can be a stumbling block. So we have to always keep ourselves connected to hearing Krishna Katha and associating with other Vaishnavas. And by chanting the holy name offenselessly. So if we endeavor to chant the holy name offenselessly, then we have a less chance of being affected by such things which come in due course of time in the practice of Krishna consciousness. So we have to understand that these things are obstacles and we should not be hankering for them. We should not be hankering for a position or name or fame. But sometimes it just comes and we have to use it in Krishna's service. So, of course, in the material world, everyone thinks they are very beautiful. And so everyone in the material world has a form. There are animate forms and there are inanimate forms. So everyone is attracted to beauty. So people are attracted to beautiful things, beautiful inanimate objects. And people are also attracted to beautiful animate objects. And everyone thinks they are very beautiful. That's why people, they like to spend a lot of time in front of the mirror. So people are appreciating their beauty. People are appreciating their form, which they think is very beautiful. And also, Queen Kunti says that this beauty can be an obstacle. So Queen Kunti says in her prayers, Janmaishwarya Shudra Shri Bir, that my Lord, your Lordship can be easily approached, but only by those who are materially exhausted. One who is on the path of material progress, trying to improve himself with respectable parentage, great opulence, high education and bodily beauty, cannot approach you with sincere feeling. So we can see that sometimes this beauty can be a disqualification for progress on the spiritual path. And if someone is pious, they'll be beautiful. They'll have high parentage. These are the signs of piety. If someone is impious, they'll be ugly. They have legal problems, you know, chronic health problems, you know, such kind of things. But if someone is pious, they'll have the opposite of that. So in the material world, everyone is hankering for such things, you know, like for basically the results of pious activity. So everyone wants to be beautiful. They want to have high parentage, high learning, lot of wealth. These are signs of piety. So people are hankering for this. But that is the material disease. So Prabhupada gives this story of, there was this woman and a servant. So one time this woman's servant was sick. Her maid servant was sick. So her temperature was say, what's the normal body temperature in Fahrenheit?
98.?
Okay, we'll take your version to be final. You're the doctor. 97.5, is that right? 0.4, okay. So, the maid servant's temperature was, you know, 100 degrees plus. So, this woman said, you know, you're sick, so she called the doctor. And the doctor said, her temperature is very high and she's very ill. And she said, you know, why is her temperature so high? I'm the master, so my temperature is supposed to be higher than her. So we understand that that is insanity. So in the same way, everyone in the material world is hankering for these things. You know, beauty, wealth, knowledge. But these are like disqualifications on the spiritual path. They can be disqualifications, not necessarily. If they are dovetailed in Krishna service, then they're not. But the thing is, when one is very wealthy, beautiful, one becomes intoxicated. That's the problem. So, it's not the beauty and the wealth, but because we are hankering for these things, and that defines identity, then we become intoxicated by these things. So when one is intoxicated, what happens? So one becomes proud. And we can see that that's what happened to Nalakuvera and Manigriva. So Nalakuvera and Manigriva were the sons of the demigod, was the sons of Kuvera. So they were very rich and very, very beautiful, very handsome. But they got intoxicated by that. And as Narada Muni, he says in the Srimad Bhagavatam, I think in the 7th canto, that where is it gone? Basically, Narada Muni says in the 7th canto that of all these material opulences, the riches is most intoxicating. So if someone has a lot of wealth, that's more intoxicating than beauty, than personal bodily features. So the effect of wealth is more intoxicating than beauty. So though all of these things, beauty, wealth, high learning, you know, high parentage, they can be intoxicating, but the riches is the most intoxicating. That's what Narada Muni says in the Srimad Bhagavatam. So we see Nalakuvera and Manigriva, they were very beautiful and they were very rich. They were like sons of Kuvera. So, but they got intoxicated by that, and they were enjoying themselves in a lake with some damsels, and they were naked. So when Narada Muni was passing by, so these damsels, they covered themselves because they felt ashamed. There's a great personality walking. So they covered themselves. But Manigriva and Nalakuvera, they were so intoxicated that they didn't care, you know, there's a great personality walking. So then he cursed them. He cursed them that you should become trees, because you like to hang around naked. Then just become trees and just stand in one place naked. So we can see that how these things have an intoxicating effect. And therefore, on the spiritual path, they are considered disqualifications. So, in one sense, it's not bad if someone doesn't, if one doesn't possess these opulences, because then it can be easier for them to come to Krishna consciousness. It can be. Of course, as I said, every person thinks they're very beautiful, even though they're not. And we see that people who are not so rich, like I've had that practical example, people who are, like even in door-to-door book distribution, you go to very wealthy neighborhoods, it's very hard for them to buy a book. But if you go to, you know, middle-class neighborhoods, they look at the books and they are more open to it. So people who are very wealthy, generally they're very intoxicated by that wealth and they become very proud. So Queen Kunti is saying that generally what happens if we possess these four opulences, material opulences, then it's very difficult to call out the name of Govinda with feelings. So the whole idea in Krishna consciousness is to perform a devotional service with feelings. So when we chant the holy name, we have to chant with feelings. And as Prabhupada says in the explanation of the Maha Mantra, he says that one should chant the holy name of the Lord just like a child is calling out for his mother. So that should be the mood. But because we get intoxicated by these material opulences, it's very difficult to call out with feelings. So here from, we can see Shukdev Goswami's, we can conclude from his bodily features that he's a great personality. And another thing is, in today's world, people think that to be beautiful means to have no fat. Right? You know, drink skinny milk this, skinny that. So, but in the Vedic times, to have some fat on the body is considered to be beautiful. So there is, our bodies are composed of skin, fat, muscle, blood, bone, was it marrow, and semen. So of course, you know, skin. Okay, skin is very important. We see there's so many cosmetic products for the skin. Skin is. People are looking after the skin. Then the next is fat. But in today's society, a lot of people, they put emphasis on the muscle. But it's actually the fat which makes one look beautiful. So, you know, muscles make one look very hard, you know, hardcore. But it's actually the fat. That's in the Vedic times. So even we see foods in the mode of goodness, they are fatty, they're juicy, and they're wholesome. So, fat doesn't mean you become very fat, but not fat in that sense, but fat means, you know, you have to have some bodily fat, and that's what makes one attractive. If there's no fat, you're just skinny. So I was like, you know, these days a lot of teenage girls, they're so conscious of, you know, about their body that they practically starve themselves to death just to have a figure. Just look very skinny and thin. But they are more beautiful if they have some fat. So here we see Shukdev Goswami, if you study his bodily features, he has all the features of a Mahapurush and is very attractive. And with Shukdev Goswami, when he came to the assembly, there were women and children following him. And as is mentioned in text 28, that the women were attracted by him. But the sages, when they saw Shukdev Goswami, they could understand his character. So the sages, they stood up, everyone stood up and offered their respects. Because they could understand from his physiognomy. Whereas the women and children, they could not understand his true glories. They were just, the women were attracted by his bodily features. And we also see in the Srimad Bhagavatam, there are other personalities who had similar features to Krishna. For example, Uddhava. So Uddhava looked exactly like Krishna. So Uddhava, he was sent to Vrindavan by Krishna to convey a message to the gopis. So when Uddhava arrived in Vrindavan, he was greeted by Nanda Maharaj. So he had a chat with Nanda Maharaj, then he took rest. And the next day, because Uddhava came on a golden chariot. So when the gopis, they came to offer their respects to Nanda Maharaj and Mother Yashoda, they saw this chariot parked outside. So first they thought maybe Akrura has come to Vrindavan. So they were not very happy with Akrura because he took away Krishna from them. So they thought, again, cruel Akrura has come here. But at that moment then Uddhava came out, and when they saw Uddhava, it's mentioned that he resembled Krishna. So he had long arms, you know, blackish shoe, He was even exactly dressed like Krishna. So we can see that personalities who are very absorbed in the Lord, sometimes they have similar bodily features. And of the five types of liberation, one type of liberation is to have similar bodily features as the Lord. So, I'll just end here. Do you have any comments or questions or corrections on this subject matter? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, that's right. Vishnu Tattva.
Yeah. I was just going to say, like, in the description of Krishna's body, it describes, like, as you were saying, his chest is broad, like the doorway. And you've kind of answered my question already. Like, it occurred to me to ask is when I think of a very broad chest, I think of quite muscular features.
Mm.
But Krishna wouldn't really have very muscular features because, as you said, it looks a bit gross, a bit hardcore, and it isn't actually sort of so attractive. And Krishna being all attractive, he wouldn't be excessively muscular, but he would have like definition.
Yes,
nice definition. But, yeah.
Okay. Comment. Yeah. Thanks. Prana Prabhu, would you like to make any corrections or questions or comment? Slightly proud of his renunciation. So Krishna wanted to give him
see that he is still functioning in Krishna consciousness with the mental facility.
Yeah.
And not be distracted. So you don't have to be poor, but poverty is not a qualification for becoming Krishna conscious. That's the misunderstanding of that. Sadhu can access a poor man, a poor man can easily receive a sadhu. But we don't have to be poor to receive a sadhu.
Mm.
We can be rich.
Yeah. Thank you, Ru.
Do you think that when we see like beautiful people, they got that beauty because they were more envious of Krishna, or they got the beauty for performing on?
Materially speaking, because of pious activities.
Because of
pious activities.
But is it related with envy?
Of course, envy is there in every condition, so that's why we are in the material world to enjoy separately. But in the course of being here, those who know the material system, if they want to enjoy properly materially, and if they know the Vedic system, they will perform pious acts, so they can have a good material life. And they know if they do pious acts, they'll become beautiful, this and that. But the envy of Krishna means not to serve Krishna. So even if they're doing material acts, material pious acts to gain beauty and all that, but they're not serving Krishna, so there is envy.
I was going to say, just on top of that, you don't need to be beautiful to envy Krishna.
You don't need to be?
You don't need to be beautiful to envy Krishna. I know some very ugly people that are quite envious of God.
You don't need to be
beautiful.
You don't need
to be beautiful to envy Krishna. I know some very
yeah, that's
ugly
right.
people
of course.
That are very envious
of
God.
Of course, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, my point is both are envious, you know, beautiful and ugly. That's my point. Yeah, this, you know. Okay.
It's mentioned that Shukdev Goswami resembles Krishna in one structure. So Krishna dresses so nicely, beautifully, but why the devotees are...
Why is Shukdev Goswami naked?
Yeah.
He's not even dressed. Well, it's mentioned here. I read somewhere. But basically because he didn't want to attract any attention. He didn't want to be distracted in his spiritual path. So like we see Jadbharat, right? He was behaving like a madman. That was because he did not want others to disturb him. And he felt that he could again fall into Maya. So he was. That's why he was. Because already one lifetime, you know, he became a deer. He didn't want anything like that to happen. So he wanted to stay away from material association. So sometimes, great devotees, they act like this. But that doesn't mean that they're not great. They just don't want to be bothered. Thank you very much. The Prabhupada ki. Thank you.